This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Irresponsible dog owners are why San Antonio is seeing an increase in dog attacks, and those dog owners will be held criminally liable if their pets attack someone. That's what we're hearing from the San Antonio Animal Care Services Department. And we're going to be talking about that this afternoon. You can call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Your questions and comments about dog attacks and irresponsible pet ownership here in town. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined by Lisa Norwood. She's the outreach manager for the City of San Antonio's Animal Care Services Department. And Officer Shannon Sims, he is the Assistant Director for Animal Care Services Department. Welcome back to The Source, both of y'all.
Thanks for having us.
So, Officer Sims, can you kind of tell me the state of the streets here in San Antonio? What are we seeing? What is this spike in dog attacks that we're talking about?
Yeah, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, what we've seen is kind of a rash of what we call SBI cases, severe bodily injury cases. And it's a little uncommon to get five of those in such a short amount of time. Kind of the most disturbing part, you know, aspect of this is the fact that four of those five serious bodily injuries were children that were 3 years old and one and less.
And these were children who were sent to the hospital with severe injuries?
Significant injuries, requiring multiple surgeries, et cetera.
Lisa Norwood, what are you hearing? You're the outreach manager. Has something changed?
You know, we looked at each of these cases and tried to find commonalities. What were the things that each of these cases had in common? And what were the things that were causing these dogs to do what they did? And the only thing that our investigators could come up with is that these children, in the four cases that Officer Sims were referring to, these children were being left alone with animals that that they shouldn't have been left alone with. They were being left alone with animals that were unpredictable. And when we say animals that were unpredictable, we teach in our schools, we teach in the outreach that we do, that if you have an animal in the house, that animal should never be left alone with a child.
What do you mean? So we're talking about an infant, a toddler?
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about, in this particular case, in these particular bite cases, in these particular serious bodily injury cases, we're talking about children that were under the age of three that were left alone with dogs. And
left alone in the room, left alone in the house?
Left alone in rooms, left alone in which dogs had access to them. And that's something that should never occur. But we teach even beyond that, that if an animal, we teach that if an animal has teeth, it can bite. Any animal can bite, whether it's an owned pet that you've had for all of your life, or if it's a new pet, a strange pet, dogs can bite. Cats can bite. So we teach our children, we teach adults to recognize behavior so that they can be proactive and not get bit, or at the very least, recognize that behavior to reduce the risk of getting bit. In this particular case, unfortunately, these children were left alone with animals that unfortunately were unpredictable and caused serious, serious bodily injury.
I see on the internet all these videos, cute videos of big dogs snuggling up with tiny babies and acting.
It makes us cringe. It makes us cringe.
So, but there are the exceptions to those cute videos. Those are they don't make the YouTube cute video. They make the blotter of horrible things that we need to deal with.
Absolutely, and these are not. Those videos are the exception. That is nothing that we would ever recommend somebody to do because, again, if it has teeth, it can bite. And we would never recommend that somebody do something like that because for every wonderful pet that would never, ever hurt a child, we have a pet that, for whatever reason, may be triggered to act in a way that would never, ever that somebody would never, ever believe that they would.
So if I am the adult in the household, and this is my animal, this is my pet, and I leave the child, the infant, in the room with the dog, and the dog attacks the baby.
You're responsible.
Am I responsible?
Absolutely.
Am I criminally going to be charged?
You could actually be, depending on the circumstances, be charged with criminal neglect.
Did that happen?
Oh, did it happen
in
these
cases?
I know there are some of them. Again, we're still pursuing these cases. These are very recent cases. We've taken all the dogs into custody. We've had most of them have already been adjudicated. We are still pending hearings on one of the other dogs. But the long-term event is going to be do we prosecute criminally on the individuals, the owners, the adults that were in the room? And I think that, Lisa talked earlier about behaviors and understanding behaviors. And what people really need to understand is all dogs, their lives are driven by a dominance perspective. You know, you have the strong owner and everything. The dog recognizes, okay, I'm subordinate to the owner. When you leave a small child, a toddler or something like that, the dog is going to try to establish dominance. You know, he wants his place in the family, and he's going to try to establish his dominance or her dominance. And obviously that child makes a very good target for them to say, okay, I'm dominant over this.
And dogs get jealous.
They do. Absolutely.
And so they see the infant as a threat to them, a threat in their order of where they are in the family?
It's just more of a maintaining. They want to maintain where they're at in the pecking order.
But so still, parents need to realize they are criminally responsible if the dog attacks their child. That puts a parent, it's like, they've gone through a lot.
They've already got the grief associated with the injuries to their children.
And dealing with the maybe long-term recovery, maybe lifetime injuries that could be inflicted on this infant, if they've had like a limb severely mauled, and now the parent is going to have to deal with the fact that they're being ticketed or cited and could go to court over neglect, charges of neglect. And parents, so Lisa, you want parents to recognize that I didn't know is not going to be good enough.
Well, absolutely. You think about all of the things that as parents or even as caretakers of children, that there is a reasonable expectation that we would know. As parents or as caretakers of somebody who is who needs to be cared for, whether it be a child or in one of these other cases, an elderly person, somebody who needs to be cared for, we need to understand that that person is going to have different needs than perhaps you or I would. And it's reasonable to assume that we're going to have greater care of them. And so it's reasonable to assume that we would have to take that greater care of them. And that there could be negligence if you don't choose to do that.
All right, so we're going to be talking more about dog attacks, irresponsible pet ownership here in San Antonio, what's being done to change the culture here in San Antonio, what resources are being made available. Have you ever been bitten? Are you a victim of a dog attack? What did you do? Call in 210-614-8980. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about dog attacks and irresponsible pet ownership this afternoon. We invite your phone calls to tell us what you see out there. The number to call is 210-614-8980. Have you ever been the victim of a dog bite, a dog attack? Has your dog ever bitten someone else? Do you think your dog could be capable of doing so? And how do you make sure that doesn't happen? What can you do to protect yourself and others? What is the city doing in order to make our streets safer for pedestrians, bikers, everyone else who want to use the streets when we have so many animals that are out loose? We're joined by Lisa Norwood and Officer Shannon Sims with the Animal Care Services Department. So earlier we were talking about dog attacks happening in your own home with a dog, your family pet that you have that you think is going to protect your family, actually turning on an infant that you bring into the house. But also we have the problem of dogs that leave the yard and attack people who are just pedestrians down the streets. Lisa Norwood, we had a case like that also.
We did. One of the cases that Officer Sims was referring to was actually an elderly gentleman walking to a church event, and two dogs, owned dogs, came out of their yard, and while one of them knocked him down and then retreated, the other dog continued the attack and unfortunately bit him very severely, bit him a number of times, and sent him to the hospital, where he received a number of quite severe injuries, did he not, Officer Sims?
Yeah, he actually underwent, during the short period after the bite, six surgeries that I'm aware of to try to repair some of the damage. And you know, as you talk about that, that was to a grown man. Granted, he was elderly. But the children, some of the injuries that we saw were fractured skulls, broken ribs, punctured lungs, things of that nature. And it doesn't take much for a powerful animal to be able to injure someone who's elderly or a minor.
There's an inherent vulnerability to the young and to the old. And I think that that enhances our responsibility as adults, both as caretakers and as parents. I think that it means that we have to do a better job as caretakers and as parents to protect them.
So if you have dogs, they belong to you, and people recognize those are your dogs, they live in that yard, and they get out and they attack someone walking down the street, how am I responsible for that? You know, is it because, you know, they're my dogs?
Because your dogs are your responsibility, and they have to remain on your property. That is the law in the city of San Antonio.
And so what happens to me next?
Well, this could realistically, you know, move from just citations for your animal being free of restraint and biting somebody. But when we start talking about serious bodily injury, now we're talking about criminal cases. You could get jail time if your animal injures or kills someone. You know, we spoke earlier off air about the lady that lost her arm last year to a dog attack. That individual is in prison right now, serving jail time. You know, and it's a very, very serious issue. And people, I think, don't understand the gravity of it until you actually see this whole thing progress. It's very serious.
I've been bitten by dogs running down, as I run in my routine. And it's not a severe dog attack bite. It's, you know, sometimes they'll, you know, it's a nip or something. It'll break the skin. But, it, you know, it's enough to, you know, take a couple of years off my life, psychologically. But, you know, what do I do? What am I supposed to do? Like, call the cops because a dog nipped my heels? Or what do I do?
I mean, if you have an injury that requires immediate attention, definitely call 911. If it's a minor bite or something like that, call it into 311. We'll get an investigator out there. Regardless, we're going to go after that owner. The individual is going to receive misdemeanors just for the fact that their animal was off property and did attack you. Obviously, when we start talking about an escalation in the amount of damage done to the individual, at that point, it can escalate, like I said, all the way to up to a felony.
All right, we're getting some callers in. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about vicious dog attacks here in San Antonio and the owners who are supposed to take responsibility for these animals, but they don't. And Paul is on the line. Paul, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I live over here on the east side near AT&T Center. I'm a runner, and I like to walk. I have a little dog. He's a Jiu Jitsu with a summer buzz cut. We run. We do 5 miles a day.
Awesome.
A week. We live on the east side. The only way I can go run or walk safely is by sticking to paths that I have found through trial and error to be free of vicious dogs who want to run out and bite me or kill Homer, my dog. Now, there's one particularly egregious example down the street. These people who have a pit bull that is the most vicious dog I've ever seen in my life. And he has escaped from the fence, he's behind. He escaped 3 times and threatened me. I was able to shout him down, you know, which is kind of what you do when a dog attacks you. You shout him down if you can. Well, I went by with Homer one day. This dog comes out, and he's moving so fast, he comes and grabs Homer by the leg. So he's pulling on Homer. I'm pulling on Homer. Homer's suspended in midair. Finally, I freed Homer from this dog's grasp. We went home. Homer's got a puncture wound. I'm extremely upset, to say the least. Well, I called animal control. They came out, but they didn't do anything. And they really can't do anything because I think they're constrained by the laws and the rules they have to work under. You know, even when they come out and find a vicious dog, you know, they're still constrained.
All right, Paul, how's Homer doing right now?
Homer's doing great. I tried to take him to the vet. Nobody, and I couldn't reclaim the money I had to spend. These people, they just don't care, which is a problem over here on the east side. You have people with dogs, vicious big dogs in their backyards. They don't take care of them. Often they're chained, they're mangy, they're skinny because they're underfed. People just don't care. For some reason, they get these dogs.
Right.
But they didn't really want a dog, and they darn sure don't need a dog.
Paul, thank you for the call. I'm so sorry to hear about what happened to you and Homer. So let me go to Officer Shannon Sims. He's the Assistant Director for Animal Care Services. And can you sort of talk me through what
Absolutely.
You heard?
Absolutely. Hey, Paul, thanks so much for the call. And what I want to let you know is while we do have some certain restrictions, there is absolutely something we can do in your scenario. If an animal is coming off property and we know that that animal is owned, if you go to Animal Care Services, you can fill out a dangerous aggressive affidavit. That enables us to initiate an investigation. It allows us, if the animal is threatening a human, you know, such as yourself, we can actually seize that animal, do an investigation, and if we deem that that animal is coming off property and threatening individuals, it may be deemed dangerous, which means that there are very, very strict restrictions that have to be placed upon the owner in order to reclaim the dog.
So they have to go to your location in order to file that paperwork?
Right. We need an affidavit to be able to initiate that investigation.
Can't do it online.
No, because it has to be notarized. We will provide the notary and things like that at the facility. Folks can fill it out and have it notarized and send it in to us, but it does have to be a notarized affidavit.
So you guys are not in a central location. I don't even know if you're on a bus route. I mean,
we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're way on the, you know, what is it, Highway 90 or what?
Highway 90 and yeah. 151.
Yeah. So people who have transportation issues, it could be a challenge to get there.
And even if you put a 311 call out there, like for the, you know, for instance, Paul's dog was injured and was attacked, you can put that 311 call in. We can go out there and we can send an officer out to fill the affidavit out in the field and get that thing notarized.
Okay. So you can come to them and do the affidavit if they need to.
Right. We're going to try to facilitate all we can. We take those and our dangerous and aggressive investigations have escalated. We are doing many more of these than we've done in the past simply because of the fact that we're pouring more resources into making sure that these are taken care of and those animals are properly restrained or taken off the streets.
Now, I had a web comment on our web post, and it says that one mistake is that allowing animal control to become animal welfare, animal care services. They're alleging that you care more about the animals than you do about people. So Lisa Norwood?
Well, to that I would say I think that there needs to be a balance. And that's something that we've had to work on for a very long time here in the city of San Antonio. You know, when I began at Animal Control back in 2006, we were euthanizing 90% of the animals that came into the shelter. I think that there's probably a lot of people in our community that would say that's probably not the best approach either. So when you look at balancing the care and control, if you can achieve a balance between making sure that we are protecting people by bringing in 30,000 animals a year, which is the amount of animals we are bringing in, but also trying to find placement for as many animals as we can. And right now we're looking at having about a 92% placement rate here in San Antonio. Right now we have cities throughout the country that are looking to San Antonio as best practice for both animal control and animal care. So that says something when you have national organizations that are looking to us for both our adoption practice and our animal control practice. National organizations like Humane Society of the United States, National Animal Control Association. When both of those types of organizations are looking to San Antonio for the programs and the policies that we have, it says that we are achieving that balance.
So when you say you're bringing in 30,000 animals a year, that mm-hmm. they're coming from the streets? Where are these animals?
They're coming from the streets. They're coming in through our front lobby. People are bringing them in both as Good Samaritans and as people who no longer want or can no longer care for their animals.
And realistically, even though we have changed our name to Animal Care, the reality of it is we're doing twice as much enforcement as we were 5 years ago, in the form of misdemeanor citations, cruelty investigations, things of that nature. So, you know, yeah, we've softened the image a bit with the name, but at the end of the day, we're really going out there and doing twice the enforcement that we've done in the past.
Another caller, Annie. Annie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys today?
All right. Great.
Hi, Annie.
Hi. I am going to try not to be emotional about this issue because I am a volunteer at the National Victims of Canine Attack Support Network. I have volunteered with them since 2012. And I have seen the number of dangerous dogs across the nation rise. We're not doing a very good job about identifying the breeds that are committing the severe and fatal attacks on not only humans, but animals. In this country, we have 13 deaths. One death every 13 days. And the victims that I talk to have lost faces. They've lost legs. They've lost their dignity, they've lost jobs, they've lost income, and many of them have lost their children and parents and siblings to dangerous dogs. We're not talking about Yorkies, we're not talking about Dalmatians, and if I name the dogs, which most of your callers will say, oh, it was a pit bull that chased me, it was a pit bull that got out of the fence, then I will get to my organization 1,000 emails wishing me death and that all these things. So there's no middle ground in which to talk about dogs that are committing these. And it's not just pit bulls. I would say that pit bulls are the majority of the dogs that are doing this. Pit mixes, because they get out and they mate with other dogs. American bulldogs, Staffordshire Terriers, those dogs. Is it because they're inherently like that? I believe so. Not all of them come from those bloodlines. But I do believe also that there are some other many factors that we can't control. Ownership, what people believe that these dogs are capable of, what they aren't capable of, and just the strength and tenacity of these animals. So without naming these dogs, and I hate to go on, I can't really hear you guys, and I'm just on my phone. I'm actually in Lubbock. I live in San Antonio. Without naming these dogs and saying these are the dogs that are doing this, then we're taking the protectionism factor, the ability for people to go, okay, those dogs could hurt my child.
Okay. Annie, thank you so much for the call. We have to take a scheduled break here. When we come back, we're going to hear back from Lisa Norwood and Officer Shannon Sims about from Animal Care Services about breeds and how to factor in the breed of dogs. If, you know, pit bulls, not an actual breed, it's sort of a generic term we have for several breeds, but is that really the issue, and what can we actually control, and how all the things that you bring to light, we will talk about that as well. What people need to do to recognize that certain dogs, the size of dogs, is something to be aware of when and how dangerous they can be. We're going to continue the conversation talking about dog attacks. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about vicious dog attacks in San Antonio. We've seen a sharp rise in them recently, and irresponsible pet ownership appears to be the problem. We just heard a caller talking about the problem of pit bull ownership, and if that is something that needs to be dealt with, or if that in and of itself is the problem. So let's talk to Officer Shannon Sims. He's the Assistant Director for the Animal Care Services Department here in San Antonio. Lisa Norwood is their Outreach Manager. We talked earlier about this recent shocking attacks of dogs turning on little babies in their own house. Were these pit bulls?
Not all of them. Out of the five, we had one that would be considered a pit bull, a Staffordshire Terrier. We had a bull terrier. We had an old English bulldog, an Australian cattle dog, and a lab. And so, you know, it's I think that a lot of times it's easy for us to say that, you know, it's pit bulls. We do see a lot of the Amstaff blend attacks because that is a very prevalent breed mix in San Antonio. Additionally, you look at the fact that a lot of folks, they want this to be their security dog. They chain it up. That causes problems with any animal when you keep it chained up all day long. And, you know, the irresponsibility of not going out there and really socializing the animal, things like that, then they get loose and bad things are going to happen. Then on top of that, you've got that it is a very powerful blend. You know, it's a powerful breed of an animal. And if it does go after you, you know, Annie said it exactly right. You know, it's not the Chihuahua and this, that, and the other, although we get a lot of those bites. But they're not doing the level of damage because they aren't as powerful of an animal.
So is there a situation with the take some callers. We've got so many callers, I need to get them on the air. Let's get Steven on the air. Hey, Steven, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
I was actually I'm going to piggyback off of what he just said. I mean, I think it has more to do with people get these dogs and then they train them to be aggressive. I mean, I've had friends who've had pit bulls, who've had Rottweilers, and they were just as docile. You know, it just depends on how you train the dog to be. And if you train a big, strong dog to be aggressive, well, then, yeah, it's going to hurt people. If you train a Chihuahua to be aggressive, well, then what is it going to do? Nip at your leg. So it's not going to really matter. So I think that that's what it is. I think it has more to do with training. And, I mean, yes, there's a potential for aggressiveness and everything, but when it comes down to it, you can train a dog to act like you want it to act, you know?
All right, thank you for that call, Stephen. I'm going to go straight to Jan. And Jan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. We have a reoccurring situation in our neighborhood where a gentleman walks his dogs off leash. I don't know if it's every single day, but I would say several days a week. And his dogs attack other dogs and walkers. And recently is Monday, a woman and her smaller dog. And I think these dogs are a husky type mix or huskies. And the neighbors have gone to him. I think ACS has been out and talked to him. So what could be the next step to escalate having this situation stop? Because he walks with them off leash. He rides a bike with them off leash.
Jan, thank you for the call. So, Officer Shannon Sims.
What I would say, Jennifer, if we know, if you and your neighbors know where the individual lives, kind of the same advice we gave the earlier caller, you know, we can definitely do calls, and if we catch them loose, you know, we can go out there and we can impound the dog and cite the individual. If they are attacking other people's dogs and attacking people or threatening people off-leash, come down and fill out an affidavit for us.
I mean, even if they're not, I mean, they're not supposed to be walking a dog off leash, right?
Right.
And if even that was the only thing going on here, that's a reason to give you a call.
Absolutely. We can cite for that, but the escalation, like if these dogs are threatening other dogs in the neighborhood and things like that, and the owner's not willing to take responsibility, fill out that affidavit. Let us go in there and turn the pressure up.
Okay, I got an email from John. He says that ACS does not have a certified animal behavioral specialist on staff. Why not? And would that be something that would be helping you in creating a safer environment in San Antonio? So Lisa Norwood, is that true?
We actually have two trainers on staff. There's actually not a lot of animal behaviorists in the state of Texas, so I'm not sure if John is aware of that or not, but it's a pretty detailed job. And would it be something that...
So what is it, a dog whisperer type person?
No, it's actually something that's pretty detailed in terms of being able to determine animal behavior ahead of time, being able to essentially, I guess you could say, predict animal behavior before it happens. Would it be helpful at Animal Care Services? Absolutely. But one behaviorist for 30,000 animals coming into the shelter, I'll tell you what, if we could have 5, 6, 7, 8, a dozen, that would be fantastic. So if John could talk to our city council and get us 12 positions for animal behaviorists, that would be amazing.
Right, but he's just saying that you don't have one.
We do not have one.
And you're explaining that this is a difficult thing to achieve.
It's an absolutely difficult thing to achieve.
There's and you not would like actually, to get there, but it's something it's, that we're working
it's
towards.
It's something it. That would be very difficult for any shelter in the state of Texas, much less in the country.
And David, even if we had a behaviorist, one of the challenges is we've got these dogs for a very short period of time, and this is the worst day of their life in their eyes. It's very hard. It takes time to be able to establish the behaviors and everything. And a lot of times we just don't have enough time with the animals, even with the behaviorist on staff, to do something like that.
Okay.
And in a sense, that's a positive thing. We're doing so well with our live release and getting the animals out so quickly that even our trainers don't have a whole heck of a lot of time to be able to work with them, that our behaviorists probably wouldn't have a whole heck of a lot of time to work with them either.
Okay, here's John. He's called in. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. My question was, I found some difficulty with a dog that my brother had that became very vicious after he had adopted it. And it started attacking neighborhood animals that would come in his yard. And we tried to get it to the animal care services, and they gave us kind of a hard time to take the dog. They charged us money, which was my brother's on a disability, so it's kind of hard for him to afford the fee. So we paid that, and then they made us bring the dog. So we had to wrangle this thing and take it over there to the animal care services. And my question was, is there anything you can do to make it easier when people have identified maybe vicious animals that they have to bring them to you, but maybe not charge them so much money or help them a little more, especially people that are disabled?
Right, because the alternative when people have that choice to make is that they're going to abandon the animal. That's not good. So, Lisa Norwood, what can you tell John, our caller?
Well, the owner's surrender fee is $25. And the owner's surrender fee is $25 because the shelter is taking on the responsibility of caring for that pet, finding placement for that pet, housing that pet, feeding that pet. Now, remember, we take in 30,000 animals a year. Animals that are coming in every single day, 365, both from the lobby and, of course, from our officers who are out, again, 365. So that $25 goes towards housing that animal, feeding that animal, et cetera, and so on, and, of course, providing all the medical care for that animal. If indeed there is a hardship, that's something that can be explained when the person calls 311. But generally speaking, our policy is that we do not do owner surrenders in the field, because what we found is that in the past we have had people abuse that. People that have not necessarily had a hardship, but have wanted to take advantage of our officers out in the field just coming and picking up their pet simply because they didn't want it anymore. Not necessarily because they had a hardship, but because they didn't want to take care of their pet anymore.
But if a person is on a fixed income and they can tell you, I mean, you can pretty much tell right away, and you say, I'm on a fixed income, I can't afford $25. This is not, and their choices are, I'm just going to set them loose, you know? I mean, so how do, and you will work with them and negotiate with them and say, okay, well, you know, we'll, what can you do for me?
Well, we have payment plans, and we can work with people in terms of payment plans. But again, we are taking care of that pet and providing housing and caring for that pet. We can also provide people with resources where they can work with other shelters to provide that care for the pet, to take in that pet. We work with a number of other partners that could potentially take that pet in for free.
Now, we got from Twitter, Darcy, my question is, what is the owner's protection against false allegations against their pet's aggressive behavior?
That's a good question.
So, Officer Shannon Sims, how do you deal with that?
Well, we do a very thorough investigation on these dangerous dog cases. It's not just that we come in, we take the affidavit, and we say, oh, your dog's a bad dog, we're going to take it. We do a very thorough investigation on that to make sure we get both sides of the story. Typically, as we're going through that, obviously we'll see inconsistencies, but you start to see those things that are consistent. And by putting those together, and a lot of these cases, we have photographic evidence. These days, a lot of folks have video cameras on their, on their properties and things like that. It really allows us to be able to what I would consider get it right. It's not something that we take very lightly, because we realize we're removing a piece of property, your friend, your family member from your home.
And so you just don't take people at their word, and they say there's an aggressive dog down the corner, go get him, and you say, okay, show me some, like you said, video evidence, photographic evidence. That's very common to achieve these days. That's not a hard ask. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. Got a lot of callers here. We're going to get you on the air as we talk about aggressive dogs, dog attacks here in San Antonio, irresponsible pet ownership. We come back, we want to hear about what's in the city budget for the new fiscal year to make it easier, to give us some more resources, to make San Antonio streets safer for humans, canines, felines, all the good folks out there. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The issue of dogs in San Antonio, so many stray animals and out on the streets, is something that's come to the city council meeting quite often. They're trying to allocate more resources to improve what we can do at Animal Care Services. Lisa Norwood is with us. She is with San Antonio Animal Care Services Department. What's happening with the budget?
Well, budget just passed. We actually did pretty well. Got some really, really good enhancements that I think are going to help our field program. Got a number of officers that are going to not only improve response times, but also focus on a key program that Officer Sims is going to be putting in place come October.
So yep. The city budget for fiscal year 2019 allocates over $400,000 to Animal Care Services for more staff, putting more people out on the streets looking for stray dogs and trying to make the streets safer. Let's go to Christy, caller. And Christy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. So I had a situation where I have a big lab that's very excitable, and I had opened the door to greet my mother, and a neighbor was walking by with her two dogs on leashes. My dog pushed past me, ran around the lady, who actually got tangled in her dog's leashes and fell down. Now she scraped both her hand and the side of her foot, and she claimed it was a dog bite. And it was a horrible experience because it cost so much money, and I was able to pay it. But if I wasn't able to, I don't know what would have happened. The animal control officer came out later and evaluated our dog after he was in quarantine for 2 weeks. And I think he kind of realized that the lady lied. My dog did not bite her. What happens in situations like that if somebody can't afford all those fees that I had to pay when they get falsely accused of a dog bite?
Christy, thank you for this, telling us about what happened to you, and I'm glad that worked out for you. So, Officer Shannon Sims.
Basically, kind of like Christy outlined, you know, anytime that we have a claim and we have something that's verifiable, we have photographic evidence and things like that, that this injury may be attributed to a bite, by Texas state law, we are required to quarantine that animal for 10 days, and that's the expenses that Christy was kind of talking about. The good news is, after we were able to go through and evaluate it, it sounds like we found that the animal was not eligible for what's called, you know, the dangerous and aggressive deeming. Therefore, you know, she is responsible for that, but at least it didn't escalate to a dangerous or aggressive call. But we do have ways that we'll work with the citizens. Ultimately, our goal is to make sure that citizen gets their animal back. We don't want your animal. We would rather you be the responsible pet owner and take it. And we work with folks as much as we can on unique situations to try to make sure that those animals get back.
So state law mandates all animal bites or scratches that break skin must be reported to the local rabies control authority. Animal Care Services is the local rabies control authority for the city of San Antonio, and all rabies exposures must be reported immediately. How often do we get a positive on those?
We haven't had a positive rabies from a dog.
Yeah, from a dog or cat.
Yeah, we get bat positives where people may have touched a bat or something like that was dead, and those come up as, you know, positives pretty frequently. But again, that's just the bats. Dogs and cats, I honestly can't remember the last one. I believe it was
multiple
long
years
before my time.
Long time ago.
Yeah, a cat. I think we had a feral cat going back probably about 4 or 5 years ago, but mostly it's wildlife. that raccoons. We get. Yeah, the high vector species that we have here.
Raccoons,
in San Antonio.
Foxes, bats.
All right, let's go to Daniel. Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I had a situation where I, took a stray dog, like what they call the rescue dog, and, they were trying to find a home for it. I decided to take it. Within the first, week or so, I'm sitting out in the front yard with a neighbor and some friends, and we're hanging out, and the dog is on a leash. I'm still learning the dog. At that point in time, I was going to step away, and they said, let me hold the dog. No, not a big deal. They grab the leash. They take hold of the dog. I leave the premises. During the time that I'm gone, the dog ends up biting someone. Didn't break skin, but left a huge bruise. It's very concerning to me, and so I'm wondering what's the legality of that? How much am I, what's the legal bounds on that? And also, is there, resources that I could reach out to as far as, evaluating this dog correctly or anything like that?
All right, Daniel, thank you for telling us about that and your question. So, Officer Shannon Sims.
So from an ACS perspective, because the bite, you said that it didn't break the skin. Therefore, from an ACS perspective, it's not actually considered a defined bite. Not reportable to us, the whole nine yards. However, when you start getting into it bit somebody and it bruised them very seriously and they may be coming after you for civil damages or something of that nature, that would be something that we don't provide advice on because there's, multiple defenses for that. I would really recommend if someone was coming after you for civil litigation that you reach out to a lawyer and just kind of find out what your options are. Again, without it being a bite where it broke skin, it wouldn't be something that we would be too involved in other than, just causing injury to an individual if it was loose.
In terms of rescue animals, adoption animals, Animal Care Services provides free basic obedience training, different levels, for animals that are adopted from Animal Care Services, for the trainers that we have on staff. Other rescue groups, other shelters may provide that training as well. So that's something to consider, and reaching out to the rescue organization that you got the animal from may be a good option as well.
If you adopt an animal who's a rescue, these animals have gone through traumatic experiences and they have
unknown histories.
They're processing things all the time. And I've adopted rescue animals, and even their entire life, they're still kind of anxious and nervous and dealing with abandonment issues and
figuring things out.
You have to, bring that into focus and context and think of, this animal he's just getting used to me. He's not going to be happy being passed off. So we got to deal about that.
Yeah, it's really tough because, we don't have a background of the animal. Was it abused? Was it neglected? Was it just ignored? And so sometimes it is kind of difficult. You really have to work with the animals a little bit to gain that trust. And most of them will come around.
All right, let's go to Byron. Byron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. I wanted to talk about my mother. I just recently moved into a beautiful, very secure retirement community. And she had an indoor-outdoor cat we transplanted over there. And late one night, I was actually there and heard a ruckus, jumped outside. There was a pack of dogs on her in this secure community. And it was a quite expensive vet bill. But what I noticed was that two of the dogs were domestic escapees that had gotten in with friends that were in the neighborhood. Like they had the pit bull for the muscle, and there was like some kind of Malamute who was a leader. It was very interesting and scary.
Byron, thank you for the call. He brings up the issue of pack dynamic with dogs. So is it true, Officer Shannon Sims, that when dogs are going to be more aggressive if they're in a pack?
It's not necessarily like a rule of thumb, but there are definite personality changes when animals get into a pack mentality. You may have two or three very docile dogs typically, and we've seen this in very, very serious attacks where dogs that were just big dummies hanging out with their buddies, and it's kind of like our kids, they get in with the wrong crowd, they follow right along, and, the big bad guys get in there and they start in it, and they just kind of join in. And so it is definitely, you know, something that needs to be, you know, thought about whenever you start seeing those pack mentalities.
Officer Sims brings up a really good example. We tend to explain it like teenagers as well. They may be fine on their own, but when they get together, they might make some really bad decisions, and dogs can be the same.
So let's go back to the original premise when we were talking about in the last couple of minutes of the program, when we had these dogs attacking these infants, toddlers in their own home. I want to kind of stress that people are not aware that their big cuddly fur ball can turn into a dangerous threat to a baby that is, and even at night, who's been in the house for a year or so, and suddenly the dog can turn on them and attack them. What do you do to avoid that?
I think Lisa kind of covered that earlier and probably best said it, that, you know, you never leave a small child with a dog. It doesn't matter how friendly the dog's been its whole life. You know, all it takes is one instance. You know, one thing that the child does that triggers the dog, or one thing that the child does that maybe makes the dog, think that it's challenged.
Challenged. Even if they have been, like, just earlier snuggling up against each other and acting like they're the best buds in the world, and I have the impression that my big German Shepherd protects the baby and sees the baby as, you know, part of the overall one big happy family. And if I walk out to go get a Coke, then the dog's going to, you know, attack and maul the child, Lisa?
It could be just, you know, a noise or some unknown thing that provokes a response. And with a child, it could be that provocation that causes a dog to perhaps unintentionally hurt a child. And, you know, I go back to what I said earlier, it's our responsibility as parents, as caretakers, to protect those that are young, those
right.
that are old.
And even though, I mean, the parent is going to be dealing with all these other issues, they're also going to be dealing with animal care services, asking questions, possibly filing charges of criminal neglect. And so this is something that everyone needs to be aware of. I want to thank both our guests, Lisa Norwood. She's the outreach manager for the City of San Antonio Animal Care Services Department. Officer Shannon Sims is the assistant director for Animal Care Services Department. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.